With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My next interview is my second TIFF interview. The Toronto International Film Festival is going to be starting very soon, and my conversation today is with Violeta Ayala and her new film, TIFF World Premiere, Cocaine Prison. And I know that people are very interested already. I've read and I've heard people are anxiously anticipating this film. It's from inside one of Bolivia's most infamous prisons comes the story of the foot soldiers of the drug trade. You need to check out the trailer. And Violeta, we had such a wonderful time together, and I hope she feels the same. We talked about a little bit about everything. We talked about cocaine, we talked about prison, we talked about Bolivia and the indigenous angle to that country and how important it is to this story. We talk about development and about love and about family and about the war on drugs and what that actually means and how much the coca leaf is a part of Bolivian culture and what it means to them. And so, how could we not have a conversation about colonialism and the impacts of that in Latin America and about democracy and what that actually means, small d and capital D. Violeta has a lot to say. She's a filmmaker. She's a storyteller. I think you're gonna fall in love with her for sure. And the film is a must see. Cocaine Prison. Don't forget facetofacelive.ca for more interviews and a bunch coming up from TIFF. And davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking, my writing, and rabble.ca as well for other podcasters that are out there who are doing some great work here in Canada. Coming right up, Violeta Ayala and her new film, Cocaine Prison. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here today to talk about her new film, Cocaine Prison. Violeta Ayala is here with us today, calling in from Bolivia, I believe. Violeta, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you, David, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on the phone. Cocaine Prison. We're gonna start talking about that in a couple of minutes. A selection at the Toronto International Film Festival, a world premiere, I understand. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of what the film is about?
Okay. In 2010, I came back to Bolivia because I was a little bit tired of the portrayal of the global drug industry in the world. I was a bit tired of the narcos and Pablo Escobar kind of idea. I'm not saying that does not exist, but I wanted to give you my own experience with what I saw. I am from Bolivia. I am an indigenous woman. I'm a Quechua woman from Bolivia. So I had a different perspective. So I came back in 2010, and I met a family of coca growers. And I went to the prison, because where else people will talk to you about something like this but in prison? So we started filming there in prison and in El Chapare, where the coca crop grows. And so that's how everything came about it. And then I found Daisy and Hernan, that they're like a brother and a sister, teenagers at the time. And they both ended up in a web of, in a crazy web of a system. Hernan and Daisy wanted to have a music band. They came from El Chapare, where their parents are coca farmers, to the city, and they were supposed to go to school, but Hernan wanted to have a music band, and Daisy too, so Hernan ended up taking 2 kilos of cocaine to Argentina, and he was caught in the border and ended up in prison. And Daisy wants to get her brother out of prison, and the film, that's the heart of the film. And then we gave cameras to Hernan and Mario. Hernan meets another guy called Mario that was I call him a cocaine worker. And he saw Hernan as a little child, as a, like almost like a father and son relationship. So we also follow Mario, and we gave them cameras. And we also teach English in the prison to gain access to film. And we filmed inside over 3 years, the whole time that Hernan was in prison. And we also followed Daisy on the outside, what happened to her and the things that she had to do to get her brother out of prison. So it's a very personal, intimate story. No one dies, by the way. it really demystifies this violence about the war on drugs. There is violence, yes, but in a different way.
It's fascinating to me the access that you were able to get. And so you just said that you taught English lessons in order to gain access. The fact that, you know, at one point in the film, we find out that this access actually caused a little bit of a problem for Hernan because he was caught using one of the cameras. How did you work around that? How did you manage that? How did you convince the Hernan and Mario to actually use the cameras in the first place? It strikes me as a little bit risky. However, San Sebastian Prison is a prison like nothing I've ever seen, and I've actually worked in and around prisons with an organization a few years ago, so I have visited a few, and it looks a little more like a slum than a prison.
Yes, but it's a prison, and it is horrible, and it is challenging to be there, because if you think about it, like, there is no silence in that place. It's overcrowded. It's a prison built for 60 people that holds 600 people today, or 700 people. I don't know, around that amount of people. So it is really like, I think that for me, it's a microcosm of Bolivia inside. Like, it works like the outside society, but people have no freedom. They cannot get out. So you the best and the worst. How we got access, I think that the guys were bored. I think that it's a film, so it's a prison. And when I say it's a prison, that has the same characteristics as any other prison in the world, and it's boring. Like, things happen all the time and are the same and the same and the same. So I think Hernan saw it. Hernan is a kid that takes life as it comes. His sister, Daisy, is a fighter. Mario was really fighting to get out. He just wanted to have a trial, to be able to know how long he will end up in that prison. So I think that the camera brought him hope that he will be able to get out and took away a little bit of boredom of that place. And they could, maybe they feel like they're in this middle of this web of a system. It's not only Bolivia, but it's global. They are the mercy of the system. And maybe when they took the camera on their own hands, they felt that they could do something.
Right.
Like they take the maybe a little bit of their fate in their own hands.
So in a way, actually, with the camera speaking a little bit of truth to power, in a way, that they probably on some level knew that if one day they were going to get out, or maybe not, maybe it truly was hopeless. But being, I would think that being able to tell a story or your story that might get out there to help others on some level would be fairly empowering, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. It changed their lives, you know what I mean? And it changed their faith. Because Mario realized that Mario learned to read and write in prison. And he learned to read and write so he could write to the journalist outside to say, this is my case, this is happening to me. He also, because he's the one who writes letters to the press, to the media, to the radio stations, he also writes letters to judges. So his case will happen. Because it's interestingly enough, even today, Mario's case is not fully resolved. Like, it's still in the open. So I remember, I just saw him the other day, and he told me that a lawyer told him that if he wanted to have, like, a clean start, he would have to go back to prison for another 2 years in order to have his case executed. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, and for those of us who have seen the film, incredibly unjust on the surface. I mean, is it Violetta? This film it's a political film. It's a film about crime. It's a film about injustice. It's a film about justice. Ultimately, it's about telling our story. It's about the world's most vulnerable, and it's about it's about so many things, like any great documentary film. Oh, and by the way, congratulations on finishing the film. It's a remarkable piece. It really is. I should have said that right at the outset. I apologize for that. But you've told a story that I would think is incredibly unique, and the perspective is highly original from the inside out. What is the movie really about for you? What is this film really about for you? You talked about it's a microcosm of Bolivia. You know, it's about this family. It's about relationships and so on. It's quite remarkable, quite nuanced.
It's a complex, I think it's the war on drugs from our side. I think that the war on drugs is being told and explained from the side of the North. But this film tells you the other side of the story.
Right.
So it tells you what was for us. Like, it's a conundrum. It's a little bit crazy because while growing coca leaves is legal, so every farmer in the coca region can grow up to one cattle, I don't know, it's a portion of land of coca, and that's legal. Making, taking, and transporting cocaine is not. We grow coca for our consumption, like traditional consumption. Like if you chew coca, it's much better than drinking a coffee, and it's less harmless than drinking a coffee. So it's complicated. I feel like that even my own family came out of poverty because of cocaine. And this is why I felt very close to tell this story. My grandfather was the head of the Communist Party in Bolivia. He is a Serbian Jew that escaped the war and ended up in Bolivia with his father as a little kid. And he told me that they funded through cocaine money. My grandmother, an indigenous Bolivian, had a pharmacy. And she told me that they sold the acid to make cocaine, even to the National Bank. So what cocaine did at some point in Bolivia is broke this a little bit of these 500 years of difference amongst indigenous and colonizers. It gave some hope. Interestingly, because before the war on drugs, cocaine was taken to the U.S. to fix for tooth pain, for a lot of things. Yet ended up today hurting the most vulnerable, even in the US, in Australia, in Canada. And while we speak a lot about the victims of the war on drugs as drug addicts because they are white, I'll be very honest about it, we don't look at the people that work in this business that are not white in the US, in Canada, or in Bolivia. So the most vulnerable are paying this price. So my idea was to tell this story from the point of view of, I'm not going to say they're victims, because I think that that's a, it's a very disempowering word. There are people who are in the middle of this. And
sure.
I wanted to also go away of this idea of the poor indigenous Bolivia with the big aguayo who is so stupid and he's tricked. No, they're not
right.
Tricked. They know what they're doing. Cocaine means money. And they take decisions like any other person and they make mistakes. So they might not make mistakes, I don't know. So I wanted to, I don't know, there is a very old African proverb that says, until the lion tells us the story of the hunt, the hero will always be the hunter. So this time, I wanted to tell a story from the side of the lion,
right.
From my side. Even on the way I'm telling the story, I didn't want to have, I fought a lot with producers and everything about not having, cocaine is the third, Bolivia is the third biggest cocaine producing in the world. I didn't want to have anything written. I wanted to bring you into our world so you can understand and live with these characters, their own journey, so we can, in a way, humanize them and think that this could happen to your kids in the United States or in Australia, you know?
Absolutely. Well, this, maybe not in exactly the same way, of course, but absolutely right. I mean, vulnerable people live, without a doubt, live everywhere, and I think when you say it humanizes the characters in the film, I think, you know, we're all vulnerable in some way, and I think that's, for me, what a great film does. It shines a light back on my own life. It shines a light back on my own relationships, my family, and so on, and how I interact with others, and hopefully makes us a better human being as a result of it. We ask questions in a new way, you know, that we might not have asked had we not seen this film. I love the way you're establishing shots in the film. The terrain, the mountains, and then the tree. I guess they're tree cutter ants. We don't want to talk too much about the actual film, I suppose, itself, but a fascinating opening sequence. To me, I just read complicated, nuanced, difficult, but all connected in some way. Is that kind of what you were suggesting?
Yeah, and I also wanted to show, because in Incredible, the film has a happy ending, but has a happy ending without a savior. Okay,
right.
So we don't have a savior, a white man or a white woman or an organization or an NGO who come and save us. So it shows that this can happen within ourselves. And I don't want to tell you much of the film, but someone like Daisy, who is becoming an engineer today, and this happened for many reasons. One of the reasons is that in this process, I became like a role model for Daisy, because I remember me always saying, if me, a dyslexic girl, can make films and I'm a film director, of course you all can do it.
Right.
And I think that in a sense got into the makeup of this film. And I think that Daisy is becoming an engineer. She's only had to do her thesis now. Hernan is working, but the brother of Daisy is also studying in some sort of engineering. So when people watch this film in Bolivia, they're going to see that there is a way out and there is a possibility, and it's on the hunt.
Well, and it's about is and Violetta, it's about choices, right? I mean, Daisy for me is just so, I mean, she's so affirming. She's such a strong young woman. She clearly not only believes in change and hopes for change, but she's confident enough to believe that she can make that change happen. And again, we don't want to talk too much about how the story plays out and so on, but her active participation in this, her desire to see justice play out and to get her brother out of jail is remarkable. It should be a challenge to us all, really.
Yeah, it's a film about love too, between siblings, you know what I mean? And Daisy is a street smart, and Daisy is a fighter. And I think the film does justice to show her dilemmas, her feelings, and that in the end, she's able to fight a little bit, take her destiny on her own hands. Life is, you don't know what will happen tomorrow, you know? We're trying to get Daisy to Toronto so people can also talk to her. I hope that the visa process is not too hard. We already applied for the visa and we're waiting. An answer, I hope that she can come with us and join us in Toronto. And I think that will open her eyes too. And I think that what I love about Daisy is that she's now 25. I met her when she was 17. She was a little girl then. She's still a young woman now, but 25. And that Daisy, you know, it shows us that life... The thing is that for a very long time we had this idea that some countries were more developed than others. And I think that now we're going back to say, who is more developed? The person, the people, the society that was able to live in the Americas for 4,000 years without destroying the environment, or once the colonizers arrived, and it's not even 500 years, or it's a little bit more than 500 years, look what we have done.
Right.
Like, it's what is development? What was the way that of living? Like, we have survived together with the coca leaf for 14,000 years. We haven't, it was the white man who came and make a cane. So it is a conundrum that we are in, and it's part of what is happening today. And I'm not saying, I don't have this view that indigenous people are the best people in the world and white men is not. At all. The problem with racism for me is that racism goes both ways. You know, goes in a way that you say, or you romanticize a group of people, or you think that they're worse than you and you're superior. And I think we're people with good things and bad things. Look what's happening today in Bolivia and Evo Morales. Like, he's the first indigenous president, yet he is proving to be the biggest colonizer. He's taking away the land of indigenous tribes in the middle of the Amazons because he thinks he's better, and because the Chinese want our oil and wood, and he's destroying the Amazons, actually, in the border where Daisy and Hernan live. And everybody now is blaming the coca growers for that. But the coca growers are just an excuse. And he's using the word development. And what is development, for God's sake? So it's not like we are all humans. And I think that the moment that we realize that, we cannot... no one needs saviors, you know what I mean? And we have to understand that what was development and what's the difference today. And yes... When you take cocaine in Canada, like, I want you to think that you might be affecting someone in Bolivia. I'm not going to go not to take drugs or anything. But I think that it's important to know where you...
Sure.
Where these drugs are coming from. The same as you care about food and the environment. Think about also about the environment where the coca grows, too. It's a lot more complex than what they want us to believe. I think the powers...
Well, and do you think, Violetta, that it, I mean, a lot of people would probably watch this film or talk or think about the implications of the war on drugs and say, you know what, this is all, it's just all about money. It's just all about power. Is it that simple for you?
I think it's a way to control, it's a way of the that the United States used to control Latin America, but today has created a bigger mess because, as I said, has taken a lot of people out of poverty, cocaine. So it's very complex. I said cocaine, for us, is a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Mm.
Yes, it is about, it's a way, it was another way of control, but it's also today, I believe that until this war on drugs is over, in Latin America, we won't have a real democracy. Our democracies are so volatile, as is proven with Venezuela and Mexico and Bolivia. And because you cannot have drug trafficking if you don't have corruption. So this corruption manages everything. So you cannot have real democratic governments without being in the entangled in all of this.
Right,
so,
right.
Like Bolivia, Evo Morales has a big powerful group that are the coca growers that doesn't matter if they don't like him, they will still support him because they think that is the only way that they can keep away from the United States. Before Evo Morales, the DAA were here killing my people. Like, I saw it from my window. I saw the U.S. arresting, hitting women, children, killing men from that were farmers growing coca. Same as in Colombia. So we do have a, for us, the war on drugs is our problem number one. And we won't have democracy, as I say again, until we end up this war on drugs. And I think that the more that we make it as this, I think that these stories about Pablo Escobar and Narcos are interesting, but they're not real, huh?
Right.
That's not how it works. It's a little bit that works like this, but the majority are the Daisies and Hernans and Marios, people like you and me, and the same in the United States, and the same in Canada. People who traffic drugs, people who sell drugs, are your next door neighbor, a 16-year-old who makes a bad decision, or a 16-year-old a black kid who needs desperately the money.
Right. You raise such a brilliant point about who is more developed and what is development. I think it's not only a fascinating question academically, but I think it makes intimate contact with reality in truly meaningful ways with respect to just all that is going on in the world economically and from an international perspective. And your comment about, 4,000 years of civilization surviving and then 500 years of the colonizers, and the question has to be asked, who really is more developed? Do you think, from a development perspective, it's got to be top down then? Is that part of the solution, getting to the people in power, dealing with that level of corruption and kind of, because it seems to me that is one of the things to take away from your film, that the majority of people in San Sebastian prison and others are essentially innocent, it seems to me.
Well, maybe half of the people are innocent. However, what I think about, by the way, it's not 4,000, it's 14,000 years that we've been in the Americas.
Oh, thank you. 14, thank you. That's right. I needed that historical lesson. Thank you.
And Aboriginal people have been in Australia 80,000 years.
Yeah, it really, truly is remarkable. Yeah, yeah. Us colonizers are fairly young.
It puts everything into perspective. And it's something that I've been asking myself also lately. I think that the power structure has failed. I don't think that the power structure as we see it today can keep going to something good for much longer. It's not going. Look what's happening in the United States. Look what's happening in Australia, in Latin America, in Europe, in France, in the UK. It's really complicated. I think that we citizens have to go back to the streets and do politics in the streets. Go back to the bases. Go back to organize ourselves so we can change what's happening. I think that we, good people, have to take back politics and people who represent us. Because today, who are representing us? Business. Why the war on drugs is still going today? It's because drug money has saved the United States from the bank crisis that they had a few years ago. Because the economy, the underground economy, not just in Bolivia, but in all over the world, runs on drug money. So who governments have no money today. Business, multinationals, corporations, they are actually leading us. Look what happened. Donald Trump is president of the United States. Malcolm Turnbull, a banker, is the prime minister of Australia. Look at France and Macron is another banker. So this is wrong. At least in the past, we had some people who represent us. We need to go back to get involved in politics. We need to go back to represent the people. Because if not, this is going to get to a point of no return. I think it's scary. It's scary for everyone, you know? Because
it
what
is
you like today in 8 hours on a phone, or like in France, work 11 months in an office so you can buy 1 month of freedom and you can be close to the nature and in the beach? So we always look at people who live, the few people who still live today in the jungle in Bolivia or in the Northern Territory in Australia, and we look at them down and we feel sorry for them, when it's the opposite way around. We should learn. We should actually learn from them. So we could look, if everybody in the world had to live how people live in Australia, we needed 5 planets. We would be dead tomorrow. So that's not sustainable anymore. And it's not fair for our children and our grandchildren to just say, okay, it's like this, but I'm okay. Well, no, you're not okay, and we need to go back and take politics in our hands. We need to start organizing in universities, at schools, in our neighborhoods, become part of it. And you know, it is really important that we take back what belongs to us.
Violetta, it sounds like that should be, and perhaps is, the topic of your next film, or one of the next films you're going to be making.
I just shot a new film in Australia about an Aboriginal group that were fighting in a way against the government and corporations, and in a way they won, so I'm quite glad. I also finished another film about people with disabilities that was a short film that was in The Guardian, and I can't say publicly yet, but soon it it's a finalist from a very, very big prize and has won a festival in Sheffield.
Oh, wow, good for you. Wow, congratulations.
It's called The Fight. I want to make a film, the third part of a trilogy about in the United States, about two Mexicans, and one rich and one poor, and what happened to their fates, and they have the same last name, and one was the head of operations of El Chapo Guzman, so it's quite interesting, and he's not in prison, and he lives a very nice life, but he's a good guy. Oh, yeah, he is actually a good guy. And then, look, I'm a storyteller, and I think I done this for probably, you know, we believe that we have past lives, so I believe that in the past life, in my past life, I was always a storyteller. And I will always keep telling stories, you know?
Well, you're continuing on in that tradition, that's for sure. We're going to have to wrap up the conversation here in the next couple of minutes, but you must be pretty thrilled about coming to the Toronto International Film Festival. Do you think are you ready?
Almost. still the final touches on the film. It's interesting because I think Toronto loves us. Huh? It's my first film, Stolen, premiered in Toronto in 2009 at the Toronto International Film Festival too. My second feature film, The Bolivian Case, premiered in 2015 at Hot Docs. And now we premiere in Cocaine Prison of Chief. So I think that maybe the Canadians love my work.
I'm glad
to be back.
I think, that's excellent. And again, congratulations. I love the way that you say that Cocaine Prison is one of the stories told from our side. We've been talking today with Violeta Ayala and about her new film, Cocaine Prison, world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival, coming up very soon. Again, Violeta, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate your generosity and taking time away from finishing the film to have a conversation.
No, thank you, David, and have a good day.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.